podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I'm joined by Russell and Tony for another Monday Club, but there's something afoot, Russell, which is why I'm having to step in. I'm needing to step in because your buddy is, he's just not
like
showing up.
2 weeks. He got beat at Wimbledon.
You know, 2 weeks running.
I'm really sorry. I promised myself I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to start crying.
Is he going to be with you tomorrow?
Because, oh, that Kevin does is dinging me all the time. He's like Roger Federer at me. He just beats me without breaking a sweat. He'll be sitting there right now going, you know, it's a shame Russell's so great. You know, he's played the match of his life the past few weeks, but it's just a shame I'm so much better than him. Sorry. That's what he's doing to me.
Too good to appear on a Monday. But hopefully, he'll be back with you tomorrow night for Scream of Celica, Russell. Let's see.
Maybe I won't be there now, Paul. Maybe I
well,
won't show up.
That's the thing. It might be me and Tony. Now, yesterday, we had a very interesting discussion yesterday, and it was on the Sunday Axon Bulletin. And we spoke, I can't remember how we got into the subject, but we were speaking about Bob Marley. And the fact that he was a big Celtic fan, and we qualified this with the background, and obviously Russell appears today with the old Rasta colours of Jamaica on the Adidas. Yeah, absolutely. But there is another name being linked to Celtic. I want to, you know, mention this. I want to talk about it, Tony, because is it the biggest headline involving Celtic at the moment? Nowhere near it. Is it what the Celtic fans really want to hear? No. But it's a wee bit of like, kind of refreshment and a wee change from the where's Eddie Howe, why is the club not speaking to us kind of dialogue that we've been having in the narrative. So Sky Sports this morning actually responded to a tweet. Conor McGregor was doing a Twitter Q&A. Someone asked him about an interest in buying Man U, and he confirmed that he was interested in investing, but he had actually spoke about acquiring shares in Celtic from Dermot Desmond first. Now, see, when you see this, and we know that a lot of people attach themselves to the Celtic brand because it's good for their business a lot of the time, Tony. What do you make of this? I mean, obviously, he is a very wealthy man. Whether or not he's a Celtic supporter, I couldn't say. I've never seen him at a game. But you know what? That doesn't mean to say he's not a fan. We spoke about that yesterday. What do you make of all this, Tony? The one thing I would take from it is that Celtic and investing in the club is definitely still an attractive proposition. Now, I spoke to a couple of people over the last few weeks around the British Super League. And, you know, David Lowe spoke about investment in Celtic, people hedging their bets, if you like, that Celtic will flee the nest of Scottish football and end up in a British Super League. And if they were to do that, anyone who's got shares in the club could make a few quid. Is it one of their ones?
Well, first and foremost, I wanted to say long time no see. I've spent more time with you guys than I have with my wife in the past couple of days.
I know.
I comforted her this morning with these lovely words. Celtic were my first love and they will be my last. Celtic in the future and Celtic of the past. And she told me where to go. You know what I mean? Fair enough. Yeah. Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. Now, if he gets involved, do we change our name to from CFC to CUFC?
Yes.
High profile man, lots of money. Listen, come on. This guy's a cage fighter. He wants to invest in Celtic. I want more information than that. You know, I want to see what you're going to bring to the table, if we even get you round the table. What's your business acumen? What do you know about the day-to-day running of a football club? You just want to pump money in like that and walk away? I don't think so. These people don't want nothing for nothing. So what, tell us more. Give us a plan here. You know, waving a tricolour and coming into the octagon to the strains of the Foggy Dew and being Irish, not enough for me to say, yeah, let's get this guy in. You know, I want what's best for Celtic Football Club. This guy is a controversial figure, you know, and has been in the court, dragged through the court for some unsavoury incidents. Well, no beat around the bush here. He's just been cleared of sexual assault and he was throwing dolls at biters and buses and stuff like that. So this is a Conor McGregor. I don't know too much about him. I don't know too much about his Celtic leanings. But he'll probably watch this broadcast and do that famous meme. Who the F is this guy? You know what I mean? I don't care. I want the best calibre candidates buying into Celtic.
Yes.
And is this what you want associated with your football club? I'm not so sure. Conor McGregor might be a lovely guy, but I want him to outline a plan. And if Conor McGregor outlines that plan and it's detailed and structured in the Celtic board, who are far more equipped to deal with what might be happening or coming in the offing, if they're buying what he's selling, then he might well get shares in Celtic Football Club. But not buying the fact that somebody might want it for kudos, you know, or to align their brand to Celtic, or some sort of vanity project, you know. So I might buy shares in Celtic, or I might buy shares in Man U.
Mm.
You know?
I know. It's like going, you're absolutely right. It's like a plaything.
You know, yeah. So I'm not, listen, and then, you know, I looked at the Twitter, and people, I get him in and stage a UFC fight at Celtic Park and all that. You're like, just hold the bus.
Mm.
There's no, put the brakes on one of Russell's buses. Think about this. Think about what you're doing back to the club. You know what I mean? If that's what you genuinely want. People want to invest money in Celtic, great. I want the highest possible calibre and candidate a person. And I want them to act in the best interests of Celtic Football Club. No more, no less.
It's the highest calibre of business person, isn't it, Tony, really, when you think about it? I've always said that Celtic is not a fashion accessory. And I sometimes feel that a lot of the kind of celebrity types align themselves to Celtic because of that very fact that they see it as a fashion accessory. It's good for their brand. And I sometimes wonder, in and around, and I know that I can't say this about Conor McGregor, but some of the other celeb fans, where were they when we were on our knees in the early 90s and we needed a saviour? Where were they when Fergus McCann wired money and then jumped on a plane and came over from Canada to save the club? Where were they then? All these celebrity fans who obviously love it when Celtic are doing well. And by the way, it's great. I mean, we spoke yesterday about the kind of pride you feel when you hear that Bob Marley was a Celtic fan and he could recite the Lisbon Lions. You know, it's almost like there's a certain age, Tony, where if you can't do that, it's like you learn the alphabet and you learn the Lisbon Lions. And if you can't do the latter, or even a Celtic fan. Are you even a Celtic fan?
One of the YouTube comments yesterday was someone had put a team up from the past.
Mm.
It was brilliant. You know, and somebody underneath said, I watched that team, or I can remember that team. And as I said yesterday, it's a very much an older person's trait. You can recruit teams like that, you know, and I love all that. I think it's brilliant, you know. So, yeah, and I get what you're saying. And, I've never, in my life or experience, I don't remember Conor McGregor being at a Celtic game. Someone might correct me on that. I've got nothing against Conor McGregor personally. I just want to know more about a plan moving forward, if it's viable, and if he could possibly acquire Celtic. But you need to know more than just that soundbite. I'm interested possibly in Celtic or Man U.
See, Tony, I think the quote, though, I could be wrong, like, but I think the quote was saying that he was approached. No other way around.
Is that right?
Which is even more baffling. He was saying that I could be wrong. Somehow, you know, I get my stats wrong all the time. I'm not the stat man, but I mean, I am sure that the quote attributed was Dermot Desmond. He'd spoke to the owner about purchasing shares as opposed to him phoning Celtic to actually get involved. So, which is even more mind-boggling if things aren't more bamboozling at the top of what they already are.
Well, there might be some kind of Irish connection there down the line with somebody acting as some kind of go-between. But that's what I mean. I want those people, you know, to get involved in it, you know. High-caliber people that are businessmen and know what they're doing, right? Because Conor McGregor's a cage fighter to me.
Yes.
That's what he does, right? That's how he makes a living, and a very successful one at that. So does he have an entourage of business people that have business connections to Dermot Desmond? Then that's what I mean. Tell us that then. Outline your plans and what you see, how you could invest in Celtic, make it better. Mm-hmm. We all want what's best for Celtic Football Club. That's what I'm saying. And he's got people aligned to him that could act in the best interest of Celtic Football Club.
Then
tell us more, you know. Don't just throw that out there and leave us all hanging.
This is a conversation, and I want to speak about a few of the other celebrity Celtic fans in a moment or two, but this is a conversation that Kevin Graham and I had some time ago in a Celtic State of Mind, and Kevin was speaking about, you know, the identity of a club. And I think the example we gave at the time is maybe Manchester City. So if we go back to even, you know, the Gallagher brothers appearing on the front cover of the NME with their Man City jerseys on, when Man City were very unfashionable. They were an unfashionable team to support.
It was the sponsor brother.
Brother. It was. It was the perfect cover. It was the perfect cover. Liam and Noel with the Man City jerseys. And it was almost as if, you know, our team's no great, but we don't care because they're our team. And there's an identity to a football club. And then you compare that now to the Manchester City of today, who I think lose a lot of their identity if these big money investors come along and then obviously just polish up the business operation. I mean, I spoke to Mark Hughes, as you know, who was the Man City manager for a spell, and he spoke about the investment that came in. So you're basically being presented with specific players who you may or may not wanted to have signed because the owners of the club wanted to have the world record signing for a footballer. So the footballer Rubinho. That comes in, Rubinho, comes in, he's a Brazilian, he doesn't like training outside. Okay, so we'll build an indoor training facility, right? Because Rubinho, the world record football player, doesn't want to train out in the rain. And it's a nonsense. And then eventually, you've got to weigh it up because on the one hand, you want to, you know, you're fiercely protective of the club's identity. But on the other hand, it would be great to be playing in the Champions League final. So you've got to try and weigh that up, Tony, you know?
Listen, there's Man City fans. Man City don't ever sell out their ground every week. You can get tickets for Man City's home games all the time. And the reason is a lot of them don't align with the new Manchester City. A lot of them yearn for the days when Paul Dickov was scoring a fifth-minute injury time equaliser against Huddersfield to save them from getting into the third or fourth tier of English football. They want those days back.
It's fourth goal of the season.
They're an unfashionable club and they loved that. They didn't give a monkeys for this manufactured history, this bought history. Part of football died last week. Competitive football died last week. Because the richest club in the world is playing another richest club in the world in the Champions League final. Mm-hmm. The two richest clubs in the world met in the semi-final. And you just sat there, if you watched it at all, and you're just like, final, and they're celebrating an all-England final, what the self-proclaimed greatest league in the world, with all the money, is celebrating the fact that two of the richest clubs in that league got to the final of the richest tournament in the world, which is slanted towards them. Where's the achievement in that?
I'm going to ask you that question, Tony, because I think that all of this chat brings up some very relevant considerations for Celtic supporters. We said at the top of the show around the British Super League, and anyone looking to invest at the moment in football, you know, could do a lot worse than investing in Celtic, actually, because should the move ever happen to a British Super League, and it's obviously been mooted already, then your financial investment will pay some dividends. And you know, the big thing for me when you look at that is it's a balancing act between the loss of that identity, Tony. So it will happen. I firmly believe that in the next 2 or 3 years, there will be a situation where we're talking on a Celtic state of mind about a proposal. And I've already said, and this is not because I've got any information to this effect, but I believe that the rumours around Peter Lowell staying at Celtic is so that he will be the man heading up the operation to get Celtic into the British Super League. Now, when that day comes, is there a dilemma for you, Russell Boyce? You know, you weigh it up, you say, well, Celtic will be part of this, you know, razzmatazz, the box office, the richest league in the world. I don't know if it's the best, but as Tony says, certainly a self-proclaimed best league in the world. And, you know, Celtic might be at that table. Do we go for that, or do you retain this identity? Can you retain the identity if you leave Scottish football?
I think if the option's there, we need to quickly, sharply realise that we'll take it, right? There's just no two ways about it. If the option is there for Celtic to join English football in one way, shape or form, it will not be put to the fans. It will not be put to nostalgia. It will not be put to sentimentality. The word of the moment just now, it will not be put to any of that. It will be done and dusted. Then you've got to ask yourself, can you question them being a Celtic fan? Can you then just drop everything? Can you just walk away for the ex like that? I think it's very difficult. I think you find yourself in a few years forgetting that you maybe done the dirty on Scottish football, and you find yourself just as engrossed in the club as what you were before, albeit whether that's right or wrong is a completely different debate. But for me, you find the impact that Celtic would make down south. Once that challenge starts happening, once the magic starts, and once the money's pumped in, I think we all become, you know, part of the cycle. And I think I struggle to find where people will be sitting in 6 years' time if Celtic are competing at the top table and sitting going, do you know what, I don't like this. Would you be supporting another team by then if that's me? I just don't see it coming. And don't get me wrong, that a lot of my heart goes against that, by the way. Mm. I promise you, that's not because that is my I just, well, I know how easy that I'm strung up, let's be honest. I'd sell my soul to the devil. The more I watch Jose Mourinho in charge, so I'd be easy.
You're on Super League bus. You got Super League bus now?
I'm not saying that. No. I know, because that'll start. No, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go that far, but.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I just think if we're all honest with ourselves and look ourselves in the mirror, if we were in some British league or Super League, we'd forget about the nasty, big little bad little Celtic, do you know what I mean, in a few years' time once we got a taste of it. And I, it's bad saying that, but I think that's true.
I do think part of their identity would die, Paul, with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree.
I think it's progress.
I completely agree.
It's the progress and it's the future, and you probably can't fight it. And the one thing I will say is, at the moment, with the European Super League defeated, you know, they're trying to come up with new ways of keeping football fresh, and the English Premier League is a bit stale, so it's ripe for a new challenge or a new revamp, and I think that revamp's going to involve Celtic and Rangers going down south. Right, I agree with you. I think within the next 5 or 10 years, Celtic and Rangers will be playing in the English Premier League. I just don't think he can fight it. I think the wheels are in motion, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that Peter Lowell is not hanging around just to sit there and do nothing.
Tony, if you look at the you know, you look at all the different aspects of this, and maybe with hindsight you will realise that they all add up to the same thing, which is that Celtic will be leaving Scottish football. One of the big ones is the fact that you'll remember a few months back Dermot Desmond pulling us out of the negotiations around the Atlantic League. And at that time we questioned it because we had been involved in that proposal for many, many years and the planning of that. You go back to the Alan McDonald, another massive, massive fan of a kind of transatlantic situation where there was promotion and relegation to, I think it was 9 different leagues at that time, and Celtic were part of that. And the good thing I felt about it is you could be relegated from the league back into your domestic league, and someone else who's won the league in your absence could then be promoted into the transatlantic league. Now, the thing with that is that it just never got off the ground. And then we hear firsthand from people who were involved in Celtic's valuation of Wimbledon Football Club, and they tried to do it a different way. So Celtic have been trying to get into the English game for years, and that was part of the reason why back in, was it 2002, when we first trademarked the term the Old Firm, because there was a business alliance whereby the both clubs were actually working in tandem to get into the English league. Back then, everything's changed. You then look at the situation also with the Colts, and we're going to be talking about a wee development in relation to getting the Colts in. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is the first time Celtic tried, I've said this before, to get into a second team into the league was in 1968. Jock Stein, forward-thinking as he was, made an application. It was knocked back in the end by Partick Thistle, making a vote against it. So we've been trying something similar 40-odd years ago, right? We've never tried it since. Now, how long has the Reserve League been away? How long have we been aware that there's an issue with development of our youth players into the first team? Many, many years. So why now are we looking at that? And you think, well, is that to maintain a Scottish presence in the league? Yeah. Am I being cynical? Am I being a wee bit, am I looking too deep into that? And, you know, I'm with you on this, Russell. If the carrot was dangled in front of the club and all the investors and those in control, they would take it in a moment. And I remember, again, where are we now? 19 minutes in, and I'm going to name drop again, Russell. So a wee bit better this time round. But I remember being a guest at the club, a guest of a friend of mine at a game, and I had the opportunity on this particular day to have some brief words with Peter Lowell, and I think I might have told Tony this. And I asked him about playing in the future outside of Scottish football, and he says there's still an opportunity for that. So he didn't give much away, but you just knew that the people in charge at a club like Celtic are looking towards it. I then look at the comments, if you remember Brendan Rodgers, I think maybe around about the Manchester City games, and one of the English journalists asked Brendan Rodgers about it because it was whetting the appetite of Scottish teams playing English teams. And he spoke about the impact that Celtic would have as a brand, as a business and as a football club should we were to join the English League. He was talking about you'd need to put an extra tier on the stadium. I think that was a famous quote. And we know that he likes to, you know, embellish things from time to time, but I quite like that quote, I've got to say. And he was also talking about the fact that, yeah, there's obviously going to be a bedding in period. But once the finances, because you're on a level playing field in terms of prize money, in terms of broadcast share, etc., once that starts flowing in, you are in a level playing field, and eventually we would rise to the kind of higher reaches of that league. I always find it interesting, again, Tony, regarding the argument about, you know, Celtic couldn't manage in the Championship, never mind the Premier League. But they're not actually looking at the Celtic as they are just now. We're looking at a Celtic with the same kind of level of broadcast deal, with the same kind of leverage when it comes to sponsorship. So it'd be a completely different ballgame, because I always say, well, if that's your argument, if an English team came to Scotland, they'd be bust in a week, because it's you know, it doesn't work like that. You would be adapting to the league that you play in.
First and foremost, I mean, Celtic have got a duty to Scotland in my eyes, you know, and I said it last week about the Colts. This was a precursor to getting a Colts team to play in the top flight in Scotland, to make sure that there was a Celtic and Rangers presence in the top flight in Scotland. And then a couple of commenters are saying, oh, how arrogant are you? I'm not being arrogant. What will happen? Big business and money will dictate this. Sky will dictate this. And if they want Celtic and Rangers in, Celtic and Rangers will go in, because that's where the big money is. There'll be no two ways about it. But I still feel, I'm a traditionalist, I think Celtic and Rangers have an obligation to Scottish football, and there should be a presence there. And a lot of people, like the Man City fans that don't turn up, would rather go and watch a Celtic coach team and a Rangers coach team competing in Scotland rather than follow the money, because it's just not what they think their club's about. Right? But this will be dictated by factors out with football, money being the operative one. You know, and Dermot Desmond has always wanted to play in the English Premier League. That's been his MO since he became the majority shareholder of the club. He's always had his eyes there, or an Atlantic League, or a European Super League, if it ever came to fruition. So, you just, again, I use the phrase, you're connecting the dots, and whilst people might not like it, they might have to embrace it. Mm. And I do feel that within the next decade, that, and people are saying, oh, we've been talking about this for 60 or 70 years, whatever it is, but it's never been more closer than this, because that's what the suits and the big money men want. It's you know, so... And if they've got an English Premier League that's a bit stale and a bit samey and a bit, what can they do to revamp that? Mm-hmm. Tell you what we'll do. We'll bring the top two in Scotland, because they bring something to the table. There you go. So I mean, these are factors that it strikes me as not being too hard to work out. It's common sense.
Yeah.
No, not particularly, because I feel that Celtic and Rangers belong in Scotland. But I'm not going to make that call. This guy's well above my pay grade. And you could buy and sell me many times over that will make that call on TV.
It's movie, Tony, by the way. I think it's completely, it's not heart and soul's one thing, you know, and I think you're absolutely right. For money. Me, Celtic do owe Scottish football something, but
scissors, paper, store, isn't it?
You get off with the, they ask the question, and you love that. Ask the question.
They say
yes every day of the week. And, you know, it's funny about the whole argument Paul's talking about. Could they compete? Would they be able to do it? As he says, we're not even playing the same sport right now, you know. Give Celtic £100 million every year on top of what they already bring in, and you would be looking at a new top tier. And, you know, it's funny because I was looking at my latest follower on Twitter. You like a name drop? Alan Thompson is following me on Twitter. Honestly, what a day it was on Friday in my house. Best day of my life. But it was poignant because it was shown as at a game at Elland Road, which I'd completely forgotten about in 2002. Mm-hmm. But we smashed them 4-1. And that is, back then, was as, even then, they were probably paying, what, double what we were in wages, when you look at the squad then that they had. Close to their wage, their annual wage bill would have been probably about close to double. Mm-hmm. And yet we were absolutely smashing them.
That leads
you
team
give us that same money. I know it's hypothetical, and I get all that, but you give us the same money and give us the same board to play with that they've got, and nah, come on.
That Leeds team got to a Champions League semi.
Aye, 3 years before.
By Valencia. So.
And the manager was Pierce O'Leary's big brother.
Yeah, David.
Yeah, Pierce, who we spoke about yesterday. The Vancouver Whitecaps legend, Pierce O'Leary.
That's right.
When we're looking at Celtic, we are looking not only at the first team these days, we're looking at the Colts, and we're also looking at the women's team. So there is actually an opportunity, I think, next season that we could, you know, we could actually go and watch all three teams, and hopefully the fixture schedule would allow that. But there has been a development when you're looking at the Colts' proposal. And the reason for that is, obviously, the proposal is to move a Celtic Colts team into the Lowland League with a view to developing the youth players who currently are either not playing at all or they're playing against their contemporaries in terms of their age. So they're not going to develop playing week in, week out against 18-year-old kids. Now, the Lowland League, the fifth tier of Scottish football, has got some opposition from three leagues, all a tier below them. The West, East and South of Scotland football leagues have issued a statement. And basically they are saying that, you know, it's all about kind of self-preservation and money. Well, of course it is, because it's football. Of course it is. But at the same time, I think there's also something to say, well, if you want to develop the youth, if you want to give youth a chance, right, we need to get them playing football at a level. Now, I remember we had this discussion, Tony, with Jim And Jim says, well, I'm concerned at that level because that level might not be good enough. And I totally get that. And I've spoken to people who play or are involved with clubs at that level. And he says, well, you may be surprised at the kind of standard of this league. And my argument, not an argument as such, but when I was discussing it with Jim, I said, well, surely, even if it's of a lesser standard than what you would expect in maybe the old reserve league as it was back in the day, surely it's still a better standard than not playing at all, Tony. Are you surprised that there is opposition to these proposals?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. And you know why I'm not surprised? Because it's unfair. Because it only benefits two clubs. Benefits to Celtic and Rangers if you get a coach team in, and let's be honest, that's what it does. So they're rearing their own produce and their talent, and they're getting competitive games, and they're getting better, and the gap gets bigger, you know. So if you're bringing that, I can understand people's adverse reaction to a Celtic coach and a Rangers coach teams coming in, because there's only one, there's only two teams benefiting from this. Now, Celtic and Rangers would argue that, well, if people are going to watch it, then other clubs will benefit in getting the spin-off from people turning up.
Yeah.
Attendance will rise, that kind of thing. So you have to weigh it up, don't you? But I can understand opposition to it. No, but you just said there, what's football now? Money dictates football.
Yeah, it's a balance sheet, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
you know, so... There is this proposal on the table. Do you want? But I can get where other clubs are coming from on this, because this benefits two clubs. Let's not dress it up any other way. It benefits Celtic and Rangers if they get coach team in the pyramid system, doesn't it?
Picking up on one thing you said there about the kind of financial element of it, Tony, and I think this is why it's a trial, because I think both Celtic and Rangers are wise enough to know that once these teams have had a sniff at the money that's going to be available, the investment, because first and foremost, there is a bounty of 50 grand, which I believe Celtic and Rangers are going to pay 50% of that each to get into the...
Remembering but the SPFL, when they were trying to join the bottom league there, and we have 125,000 each they offered.
There you go. Right, so that's 50 grand. So if you look at the prize money for that particular league, there is no prize money in the league, right? So you could say, well, there's 50 grand that they didn't have before. Then the clubs might look at things like, well, there might be increased sponsorship, there might be increased broadcast, and there might be increased gate receipts. But again, what would inevitably happen after the first season, I guess, is that Celtic and Rangers would say, well, we want to do it again, but this time, let's remove that caveat that we can't get promoted. And that's when it starts getting interesting, because as well as dropping into the pyramid, which a lot of the lesser clubs are unhappy with, it will ruffle a fair few feathers if you remove that caveat where they can't get promoted at the moment, because you're pretty sure, like the women's game, Russell, you look at the fact that they've gone professional along with Rangers and Glasgow City and potentially Hibs. I'd need to check if Hibs are professional. But what happens is you romp the league.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pump the money into the Colts team, you will start climbing up the league tables. And that's when some of the other clubs, you're going on this journey, we've seen that before, where clubs are erecting temporary stands and everything to meet demand and all that kind of stuff. The wee guy that ran about with that temporary stand must have made some money all the way through the leagues. And, you know, so these clubs are going to make a lot of money, but it'll be very short-lived. Because I guess that Celtic and Rangers would just climb the leagues, and before you knew it, they'd maybe be pushing into the top four divisions and maybe further afield once Celtic leave. So yeah, I totally agree with Tony. And you look at a lot of these clubs, you know, and they've worked so hard, Tony, to be where they are. Yeah. You know, they scratch about all year round for the finances and the investment from local companies, and everything's on a shoestring. But once they've tasted the flavour of whatever Celtic and Rangers bring to the league in terms of money, I think you know, they would welcome them back the following season.
On a lesser scale, it's like Celtic and Rangers just leapfrogging everybody to go straight into the EPL.
Mm.
You know, your Sunderland, Portsmouth, Plymouth and all the of Coventry's at Hull's of this world, you go off their head. You know what I mean? So there'll be a backlash in that. So why is it any different to getting the coach teams in? To all these clubs that have, as you say, operating a shoestring. I'll give you a story. My mate was involved with Albion Rovers, a comedian called Pat Rollington. He was a director at Albion Rovers for a while. And so I went out to interview him for the record, and I asked him, what would make a difference to Albion Rovers, no gate-wise? And his answer shocked me. 20 more people coming through the turnstiles, he said. 20, paying between a 10 and 12 quid, which would give them an extra 250 quid, which he said would pay a lecky bill or pay, you know, the players' travel expenses for that week. 20 more people, and then they got through and they met Rangers in the cup, and they get sorted for the next few years. And that astonished me. That's all that fine margin. Mm-hmm. Club, like, that's how clubs like that live. Those fine margins, you know. And yeah, the carrot of maybe Celtic coach and Rangers coach coming in and them getting more money is fine. But again, like them, like Man City, they like their club. They like things the way they are. They like the status quo. Mm-hmm. So it's not all about money. It's about competing. It's about their identity and being who they are. Struggle at times. The struggle is great, but the highs are, you know, there's nothing like it. If you're an Albion Rovers fan and you win a league title or a league playoff.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
When traders tell us how to make thinkorswim even better, we listen. They asked for a version they could access anywhere, no download necessary. We heard them. And when they asked to execute a preset trade strategy in seconds, we said absolutely. Feedback like this inspired us to build thinkorswim web, and it continues to push us. So our entire suite of platforms never stops getting better, because platforms this innovative aren't just made for traders, they're made by them. Thinkorswim Trading from TD Ameritrade.
That's dreamland stuff for them. Mm-hmm. And they love that. And there's years and years and years of daily, weekly, monthly, yearly struggle for that one moment. And they live for that. And you're going to bring in Celtic Rangers coach who will obliterate that for the foreseeable future. For these kind of clubs that operate in that kind of way.
In that world, and even above that kind of level, my experience of the thriftiness of football clubs is at Dunfermline Athletic. It's an issue, you know, even down to the towels. You never think about this as a football fan, the amount of towels that a football club goes through in a season. Who's going to buy them, you know, when you're skint? You know, Stuart Milne at Aberdeen famously removing the toaster. Remember that one? Removing the toaster, yeah. To save money on bread and on the electricity bill. Incredible. You know, and that's one of the top clubs in Scotland. So it's an interesting one. The big one, final point on the matter, Russell. So can you envisage in the next 5 years a Celtic playing someone, let's say, like, I don't know, Everton? And, you know, you're looking around at that stadium and there's an extra tier on it, Celtic Park, there's an extra tier. It's probably sold its naming rights, by the way. That's another conversation by that stage. It's probably sold the name Celtic Park, right, by that stage. And you're looking around and there's a lot of people who aren't really Celtic fans. So you've got the tourist element, you've got the half and half hats and scarves. Mm-hmm. Is that what you want for your football club?
Not particularly, no, to be honest with you. I watched a film last night, the Alex Ferguson movie, right? And you know what stood out like a sore thumb was the fact that the Cup Winners' Cup, which he won with Aberdeen, He beats Bayern Munich, then Real Madrid. Now, those two clubs are now not allowed, basically, let's be real, not allowed to compete in the UEFA Cup or the Europa League, whatever it's called now. But they must be in the Premier competition. Does that tickle me, watching Aberdeen playing Bayern Munich and it highlights of it, even though I know the score? Yes, it did. It completely had me hooked. The incredible story of a team playing in public parks and shoveling off dog crap, you know what I mean, before training sessions, are beating Real Madrid in finals. That is football. So we don't need to worry about, you know, does half and half scarves and Everton playing Everton against Ancelotti and all that excite me? Because it doesn't. But what's happened in the Super League? This could go two ways now. It either opens up and Celtic become part of the monster, right? Which I'm a little kid on me, we're all, you know, oh, we're so, you know, our morals are all so upset, you know, because of all the. And then they go, do you want in, guys? And we all jump at it right away. We'll kid on, we don't. But that's what'll happen, right? Or we flip it and European football starts realising the monster it's created and starts opening up the gates and the avenues to every country again that's within Europe or you know, if they want to broaden it out, I don't care. But, like, for me, what you've realised recently is the top 16 or 12, whatever they are, they just want to play each other. Now, I often think about, you know, this sounds ridiculous, right? But I generally think sometimes you look at the players that as soon as they join Celtic, they want to leave. Is it because Celtic's not registered in FIFA? On the game, the PlayStation game, and they've not got their own avatar on it. I believe that that is how childish they're getting. And it's not a big team if you've not got your own avatar on FIFA. That sounds ridiculous. I think it's true. I think there's a lot of stuff like that that they don't like, not being part of the club, the big club. And what I'm trying to say here is, we either have a change now, without the Super League now happening, and it obviously got vetoed, and we've seen fans storming stadiums, and we open it all up to each other again, or we become part of the problem and get a wee back handle down south, and we take that, and then where's your morals then?
I think there's been more than a Bob Marley influence permeating your room, Russell, you know what I mean? Well, see, if you're going to open up to all these clubs, Russell, going to have to make it round robin again.
Going to have instant
knockout and say,
all for it.
You've got all the money, but you could have a howler over two legs out the tournament, right? It happens, right? Because you have to open it up again to the Cinderella stories.
Yep.
And touching on what you said about Alex Ferguson produced a managerial masterstroke when he played Real Madrid. He took Jock Stein along with him. Jock Stein, he gave his team talk, and then he turned to Jock Stein and said, anything to add? And Jock Stein, because he repeated it to Frank Gilfeather in the TV studio, sat there and said to the Aberdeen players, in 90 minutes, you'll be legends. And I'll tell you why. You're not playing the Real Madrid of Puskas and Di Stefano. You're playing 11 ordinary players. You're better than them. This is your weather. Pissing rain. Right? And he said, don't play the name. Don't play Puskas. Don't play Di Stefano. Play these players. You're better than them. Good and win. I'll see you in 90 minutes. And honestly, I mean, you talk about Steen being a managerial genius. Ferguson knew what he was doing. Anything to add, Jock? Anything to add? I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? And you get 11 Aberdeen players, as you said, they've pumped Bayern Munich in the round before, or two rounds before. You'd be empty after Steen football in the most simple way. And that's what European football's all about. The dreamers.
I agree.
And the money dictates what's happening now. So you have to turn around and say, unless they are willing and open to say, look, Man City, Bayern, Real Madrid, Man U, you could go out in the first round, you know, which is why they slanted the tournament that way anyway. And it's boring and people are turning off.
Here's the thing, Tony, isn't that there's footage of Jock Stein in the TV studio and the Aberdeen fans are singing Walk On before the game or at half time? I've seen that. It's incredible, Russell. I think it might be on YouTube.
He said to him, I just told him, don't play the Real Madrid of old, the 1950s, 60s Real Madrid. Look at these guys. You know what I mean? And you see, it's astonishing that Aberdeen beat Real Madrid and Bayern. Yeah. Utterly astonishing.
But amazing.
At a time when, you know, football was, it was for the dreamers. You know, the competition, that's what it was.
The dreamers, I like that, the dreamers, yes.
Football's for dreamers. It is. Rovers dream of winning the title. That kind of, it's just a sliding scale. No, you've got the big guys and the wee guys. I mean,
I just love, I've said this to you before, I just love how Albion Rovers didn't bother actually naming themselves after like their area or anything. They just took two of the names that you would normally put at the end of a football club. You know what I mean? Right, so they had a list of United, Albion, Rovers. Let's just take two of them.
Speaking of naming rights.
Brilliant.
Speaking of naming rights.
I've never thought of that.
I told you in the group chat, the naming rights, I always wanted Jägermeister to sponsor Boca Junior Stadium. So we would have the Jäger Bombonera. I mean, who would they want to play in the Jäger Bombonera? You know what I mean? Like, yes, can I play there? You know what I mean?
Very good. Very good.
The ultimate dream sponsor. Stadium, the Jäger Bombonera. How good would that be?
That would be tremendous. You're a wordsmith, I'll tell you that. KY Jolly, you don't need to compromise identity to improve squad to compete with the best. Be humble. I think the big thing, I mean, even again, going back to some research I did into Andy Lynch's career when we were working on his book, and he spoke about the Liverpool takeover. The details are a bit sketchy in my mind at the moment, even though I wrote about it. But basically, there was a family from Saudi who wanted to buy Liverpool for £500 million. Why did they want to buy Liverpool? As a gift for one of their sons who was 12 years of age. Is that the realms you want to enter into for your football club? You know, just a plaything for a wealthy family who have no connections or any real interest in the club that means everything to you. That is the balancing act in the modern game. But again, I think it's something that we will be talking about time and time again on A Celtic State of Mind, and I will be bringing in far more of your comments via YouTube, Twitter and Facebook as we go into the end of the Axon Bulletin. We're in the last 15 minutes to go, and you know, you were talking about naming rights. We had a good wee laugh about that, about the Celtic celebrity fans, and always remember Snoop wanted to invest in Celtic as well, and he bumped into the Dylan McGeoch was part of the squad. I don't know if we're replaying in America, maybe. Were we playing Real Madrid in America, and they bumped into Snoop Dogg at the airport, and Snoop says that he loves Celtic and he would love to invest in the club. Incredible. But one of the recent investments that really was quite interesting was David Beckham, who obviously invested in Inter Miami. He was at the game last night. Did you see the goal scored by Lewis Morgan? Russell, did you see it?
No, I've not seen it yet.
Oh my word. I mean, we know how well he's performed. Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, they drew one each with Atlanta United. It was and Lewis Morgan, it was a great solo individual effort. It was an interesting signing, Lewis Morgan, Tony. I mean, I think you've probably seen him a lot more than I did, maybe before he signed for Celtic. But he seemed like one of the young Scottish players. We've been talking about young Scottish players and shopping in the Scottish market. We've spoken about Lewis Ferguson. There's my accent coming out. We've spoken about Lewis Ferguson. Josh Doig wins the Scottish Young Player of the Year award, beating the likes of our very own David Turnbull to the award. But one player who was one of the most highly rated young Scottish players at the time was Morgan. He was playing so well for St Mirren. Celtic sign him, loan him back out, bring him back, loan him to Sunderland, bring him back. Famously played him in the League Cup final that we narrowly won 1-0 up front on his own. And then the first sign that we got, a wee bid for him, he's gone. But he's absolutely tearing it up over there for David Beckham's team. He's one example. Is he one example, do you think, that we should have persevered with?
Why is he tearing it up? Because he's playing football. You know, answers in the back of a stamp. You remember Lewis Morgan's career at Celtic? You know, you picked out the fact that it's remembered for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Same with Scott Allen. Scott Allen was a naturally gifted footballer.
Yeah.
Scott Allen never got a chance at Celtic. This boy can play passes that from another dimension, right? To quote Kevin from a parallel universe. But he never played enough. This boy was a footballer.
Couldn't agree more with that, by the way.
People say he never cut it at Celtic. Never get a chance. These are players that you turn around and you say, wow, that boy's gifted and talented. Lewis Morgan was the same. But wasn't he played at all, hardly, you know? So, hardly played at all, sorry. So, how are you meant to judge them? And Scott Allen was getting 15, 20 minutes here or there, and if he didn't produce a Maradona-like pass, he's hopeless. He's no use. You know what I mean? You build teams around players like Scott Allen if you're really, you know, get in the big guys to protect them. You know, Scott Allen's a footballer to me, and I was disappointed that he never fulfilled his potential at Celtic. I had high hopes of him. I told him he was a footballer, and I was chuffed when they signed him. Just never get the chance. You know, Lewis Morgan's another one you will never know, because, as you say, played a couple of times, got loaned out, came back, got loaned out again. So was it any surprise to see him? And Beckham was the one that quoted him. Everybody looked and went, Lewis Morgan? Because somebody's done their homework and said, this guy can play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So a part of that scouting system, which we keep being back to, is, you know, where are Celtic when these matters? You know, I know they signed him, but then not to play him. So why did you sign him?
I know.
This guy can offer you something or bring something to the table. Why are you not playing him?
The one thing I noticed, Tony, and I only see the highlights that are shown, very short highlights, goals and moments, etc. And I don't know, I really don't know what the standard is over there, but it's certainly a much better standard than it was back in the 1970s NASL days, where they were just basically... It definitely is improving, no doubt about it. But one thing I noticed about him was I always felt that Lewis Morgan was a bit lightweight. You know, he was like the pre-Aberdeen Ryan Christie. He needed to bulk up. And when you see him now, he looks as though he has. I mean, the individual effort, and you'll be able to check it out online, I think he probably withstands three or four challenges before he takes a shot. I was going to say gets a shot in, but I refuse to use these modern terms. Before he took a shot, right, or was it gets a shot off? Where did that come from? Who knows? I blame the catharification of this game.
The most American thing I ever heard in MLS was the guy had a shot that went in off the post and the boy said it clanked in off the iron.
Clanked in off the iron.
I think I threw my shoe at the telly. Clanked in off the iron.
Brilliant. Superb. So there we...
Mate, you know.
Oh, I know. So there we have it. We've spoken about the top Scottish youths who have come through and played games like Tony says. So you're looking at the likes of Josh Doig, left-back. Left-back's a problematic position, as is the whole of the defence, including the goalie at the moment. We look at players like that, and now Ron Gordon's already conceded that Hibs will be selling one and possibly two of their big assets in the summer. Young player of the year, Josh Doig, is that a player that would interest you? Would he be on your list of targets, Russell Boyce?
Absolutely, but I mean, again, I think when Tony spoke on Friday about, you know, persons of interest, it was brilliant, because you're going, as soon as you do well in Scottish, I was going to say you do well in Scottish football, but as soon as you do well in Scottish football, they should instantly become on the radar. They should be flagging. My honest, humble opinion is that if you do it for Hibs or Aberdeen for 5 minutes, you go on the radar. You do it for St Johnstone's and Kilmarnock's, and you need to do it for 2 years to go on the radar, which I think is wrong. And I think that needs to be addressed as well, because it's going to become some pickings for us in the transfer market now, because everyone's done, like we were talking about the other day, the experiment world is now done. You know, it's just there's been too many flops now to carry on. You know, and too much despair, I think, after this season. I think that's the important bit now. So whereas before you're getting the benefit of the doubt on Kamalas and Soros coming in and not actually kicking a ball for 12 to 18 months before they make their first start and all that nonsense, that can't happen now. That just can't happen. That's not an option. So I think we need to be more realistic about, obviously, because the EU restrictions are all going to change as well. So we need to be more realistic about where it is we can target. Now, if it's going to be Eddie Howe, I'm sure he's going to have a complete network down south already in motion that he probably had already looked at past and previous. But he's also going to come up here and go, what do you have for me? What's on my doorstep? What do you mean, no one? If that's the answer, what do you mean? You're telling me the league's just full of donkeys. Well, why did you not win it last year? So we're going to need to have some real chats about the likes of Josh Doig and going, if it's feasible and if it's realistic, don't start turning your nose up at the price tag Hibernian put on it. And that is what is going to have to change at Celtic, because we are the first ones to go, oh, it's unfair that Kieran Tierney only went for 25 million, but then we throw in a cheeky what was it we got Scott Allen for? I just thought of it. 200,000, 250,000. You know, we insult our own clubs and then feel insulted when the EPL does the same to us. I'm sick of that. Let's say if Josh Doig is £3 million, go and get him. If that's the guy Eddie Howe says, if it is Eddie Howe, but if that's the guy Eddie Howe says, is he the best left back in Scotland? Well, I don't have a left back in my network from down south, so go just sign him, will you? You just go pay £3 million. I think that the we don't have time anymore on our side either. And I think we need to remember other clubs are so aware of it as well. Prices are going to get a wee bit elevated to Celtic, even more than they would originally. You know, I think Jason Kerr, my St Johnson support mate, was mentioning me last night, Martin, and he says that apparently Aberdeen are going to bid £300,000 for the St Johnson captain, a cup final twice this season captain, and you're going...
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Celtic put in a bid, though. If they were to, I would like to think St. John's to go, well, yous are desperate. You know, we know you're in the mire. The countdown is on. John Paul Mason's got the countdown on behind him. He's in trouble. It's £1 million, guys. Just pay it. We need to start acting like we're going to need to put a wee bit of caution to the wind here.
I think to a degree, yeah, but then Scott McKenna for me would be the classic example of a club pushing too much in that direction. You know, I would never have paid £8 million to Aberdeen. He's a decent enough player.
But we're more vulnerable now, Paul. This is the difference. At that point, we could afford not to sign him because we're winning everything.
But I tell
you what, knows Celtic's in a wee bit of a desperate scenario here with the countdown clock ticking every day. That's the difference I would say with that. Sorry.
If it is Eddie Howe and he comes in and he says, who have we got up here? We should have a list like that.
Agreed.
We should have a list like that of every top flight club with persons of interest on it. And I've never... Ryan said, you don't have to buy them all, but they should be flagged up on your radar
for
playing and making an impact at their team, if that's the kind of market you're going in. And as Russell says, they will inflate their prices. Fine. It depends what you deem value for money. £5 million in Barkas, £5 million in a Jetty, they're no value for money. So you have to learn your lessons and say, okay, if you're going to bring in guys, you're going to bring in guys that are playing against the same teams that you're going to play in the season and the season after that.
Yeah.
They've seen it and done it. The only thing is a step up in class, possibly, in playing for Celtic. Can you handle that? You've proved you can handle it at Hibernian, where you can win, lose and draw in three successive games. That's no good enough here. Can you win all three? Go and prove that you can, because we've just fucked out X amount for you. There's your stage, there's your platform. This is why you've played so well and made an impact at Hibs, St Johnstone, Aberdeen, to get to here. So now take it to the next level, because we think you're good enough. See, if you tell a player that, they'll run through a brick wall for you. They'll eat that.
Sorry, I love that.
Right? So it's how you package that and sell that to them. Doesn't matter how much we've paid for you. We think you've got something that you can bring to the table. You're a good football player. You're at the best club of your career. Yeah. You will never be at another club like this in your life. Grasp that opportunity. It works for some, it doesn't work for others. Lewis Morgan being an example of that, Scott Allen being an example of that. You know, but again, a lot of it's down to being played. See, if somebody says, we're going to sign you and we're going to play you, like Eddie Howe, you will listen. And if you play, you will give your all. There's nothing you will not do for a manager like that. And a manager... Good managers make good players better.
They definitely do. I've got a couple of questions, one for Russell, one for Tony. I'll start with you, Russell, coming in from Paul McLean. If Hibs win the Cup, our next manager should be named Manager of the Year. Now, absolutely no denying the fact that Jack Ross has done a great job at Hibs. We've spoken about him time and time again. I don't think that anyone else is on that list than Eddie Howe at this moment in time. I can't give anybody information as to when it's going to happen because the club are keeping everything close to their chest. Of course they are. But I don't think so. Although if he does win the Cup, I think that there will be other suitors interested in Jack Ross. But I don't think anytime soon, Russell, you're going to be driving a Jack Ross bus. Do you?
No,
No, mate. I mean, he can dress as sharp as he likes, but that bus is firmly in the garage, mate, and definitely not getting taken out anytime soon. I like Jack Ross as a manager, he's all right, but I think it's quite concerning, though, the way you're saying it, Paul, as well. It's like, we are, every egg is in the basket on Howe here. It's every egg and another egg's in the basket on Eddie Howe. If this was to fall through, it would be a bigger disaster than this season. Again, there's a reason why all the eggs are in the basket, is because we believe it will happen. So, hallelujah. But it'll need to happen soon just to put my mind at ease and everyone else's, because I kind of keep putting the keys in a million different ignitions, but Jack Ross is definitely not.
We've not mentioned Eddie Howe until,
to clarify,
56 minutes into the podcast was the first time we mentioned Eddie Howe. This one I'm going to throw to yourself, Anthony, before we have a wee chat about Celtic's woman and Scott Brown. Not the both of them, Celtic's women's team and also Scott Brown. Right, Facebook user is saying, do Celtic really owe Scottish football something? We constantly complain that the SFA establishment is anti-Celtic, so why support them? Why put up with the bigotry, given a chance to get away from it all? What's your thoughts on that, Tony?
I think it's the worst conspiracy theory in the world. Many titles of Celtic won the European Cup, so, you know, it's many League Cups have they won, many Scottish Cups have they won. You know, I think that's a bit, you know, I think a bit disingenuous, you know what I mean? I just think, you know, what are the SFA anti-Celtic? Are they? You know, I just can't.
I'm going to leave that one till tomorrow, and then I'll throw it back out to Lawrence.
I can't. I can't square the circle on that one, but you know fine well Lawrence will come back to you. David Syme, Rutherglen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's doing his homework already now. You've set the torch paper, mate.
Lawrence has just dialed in. I'm not going to bring him into the broadcast. He's waiting to come in. He wants to answer that question.
I think those kind of theories a bit out there, to be honest, in terms of X-Files, you know. I think Celtic do have a duty to Scottish football, first and foremost. Celtic won't be escaping Scottish football to get rid of the SFA. Nothing to do with that. I mean, that's just complete and utter nonsense. They'll be getting out because Dermot Desmond and the power brokers at the club want to play in the big boys' playground and earn the club oodles of cash. Nothing to do with conspiracy theories, bigotry or SFA, you know, or anti-Celtic agenda. I find that mindset staggering, right? I really do, and it might be unpopular, but that's where I am with all this.
Well, tomorrow we'll play part one of a Jim Farris special with Lawrence Connolly, and he will give you the other side of that argument, Tony. But let's talk a wee bit about Scott Brown. I was banging on for ages about him joining the elusive 500 club. There's only 12 players in the history of Celtic who have played 500 or more competitive games for the club. And he now sits under the following: Billy McNeil, Paul McStay, Roy Aitken, Danny McGrain, Pat Bonner and Alec McNair. It just shows you the status of this man underneath him in the 500 club. Bobby Lennox, Bobby Evans, Jimmy McMenemy, Jimmy Johnson and Tommy Burns. Now, Scott Brown and everybody above him have actually played 600 or more games. We've had a discussion about him being a legend or not. Russell, we're going to be actually joining him for a press conference this week, Scott Brown.
Amazing.
And, you know, it's one of these big farewells. We've been talking about sentimentality. I think early in the season I said I wanted him to remain at the club. He's obviously not. He's away to Aberdeen. We've been talking about the gaping hole, maybe not in terms of his playing ability this season, but in his leadership qualities and the fact that we don't have a ready-made captain. When you're looking at the scenario, Russell, the fact that, you know, there isn't really an opportunity to say a proper farewell to a player like Scott Brown, that's a bit of a shame. The next time we're going to see him at Celtic Park in the flesh, he'll be wearing the red of Aberdeen.
I think that is sad. I think you're absolutely right, and especially when it's not in an age of glory, if you like. You know what I mean? He's not leaving also with trophies. He's leaving having surrendered them all, and I mean that in the nicest way. I think there was someone had questioned Laura about, you know, something like, you know, he doesn't like the face of adversity. The reason he doesn't like adversity is because he's not used to it. because he was the reason we didn't have to go to adversity. He was stage, front, left, right and centre. Do you know what I mean? I'm worth saying it. But, like, he was the man that was preventing adversity. That's why he ain't used to it. He was such a huge reason as to why Celtic had so much success over the last decade. I think there's two ways to look at it. I think it would be really tinged with sadness, the stands being, you know, full and applauding Scott Brown as he leaves without a medal. Because that's what we associate with Scott Brown, which yeah. is taken for granted, by the way. And that is a really, you know, in history, it's going to get looked back on what this guy really was. And, you know, this is not a guy, this is a born winner. This is the guy who integrated so many people to that squad. So many guys we've had a joy of watching for, whether it was short or long spells. I'm going to have Kieran Tierney as a perfect example. We were all heartbroken when Kieran Tierney left. I think the role that Scott Brown played in Kieran Tierney's career is unmeasurable. I think the reason Kieran Tierney goes up with a Tesco bag and Arsenal fans and gets mad is because he's humble, and I think Scott Brown played up. I'm sure Kieran Tierney's character a lot, that, you know, maybe is like that. And anyway, I think Scott Brown was huge in that. I think Scott Brown integrating guys like Virgil van Dijk into the squad helped Virgil van Dijk. Have you ever listened to van Dijk speak about Scott Brown? Speaking about the best captain he's ever played under and things like that. So it's so easy to talk about legs gone and, you know, oh, he's done, he's passed it and all that nonsense. And did he only like it when the sun was shining? He made the sun shine a lot of the time. And, you know, I think he'll be... It's a real shame. You're absolutely right that we can't give him the applause. He could, but I also flip it and think it's just so sad that whatever way he leaves, there'll be no medals, you know, around his neck, because that's the guy that I associate with Celtic.
Oh, brilliant. Nice words, Russell. Excellent summary of Scott Brown. We talk about players being signed from other Scottish clubs. Obviously, Scott Brown was one of them, Tony. I remember speaking to another name drop, Mike Jackson, who played with Celtic back in the 1950s. Mike Jackson went on to be a scout for Harry Redknapp at Tottenham Hotspur. And Harry Redknapp sent him to watch Scott Brown of Celtic on numerous occasions. And he fed back some very positive scout reports to the point where Spurs tried to buy him and he didn't go. Now, there were other reasons for that, but it just shows you, we always talk about Paul McStay, you know, staying when the offers were there. Everton wanted him, Atlanta wanted him. One of the Milan clubs, I'm not sure which one, I think it may have been Inter Milan, wanted Paul McStay. There was a supposed bid of £3 million in the early days, early 80s, from Juventus, and he stayed. And, you know, Scott Brown had opportunities to leave Celtic, Tony, he didn't, and he's had a trophy-laden career. Tinged with sadness at the end, it's the end of an era, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean... I don't think you can get a better, you know, rundown of his legacy than what Russell gave him there. That was terrific. You know, there were some lovely words there. And the most unlikely choice for a captain of Celtic at the time, because the eyebrows were raised in spectacular fashion. People saying the same things. Never a captain. He's never a captain. And my God, he grew into that role. What he did for Kieran Tierney, what he did for Virgil van Dijk, and what he gave... in those team talks, the huddle, you know, I mean, most Celtic supporters probably thought he's incapable of speaking in a coherent manner to give a huddle team talk. But my God, they hardly, I mean, even through 9 seasons where nobody could lay a glove on him. And I said it on Friday, and I'll say it again, he was the beating heart of that team. And he was the beating heart of Scottish football, because many, many rivals tried and failed to knock him off his perch.
Yeah.
You know, and then everybody said, oh, it's the first time with a challenger knocked him off his perch. It's nonsense. Because he was there for 9 years, more than 9 years, to be shot at. And, you know, and nobody did, domestically. Pretty imperious, went into Europe. But, again, he played against Europe's best and enjoyed it and enjoyed the combat and took his career to some dizzy heights. And again, I go back to it, personal happiness is a big thing for a footballer, and he was personally happy. And it is the saddest fact that leaving Celtic without a medal in his final season, and what he said was supposed to be a showpiece, get that right, showpiece season, will hurt him, you know, and that's the saddest part. But, you know, you cannot hold a candle to what Scott Brown did for Celtic. and his legendary status is secured. You know, and you can argue the toss about the calibre of opposition he played against during all these years. It will never ever say that on the medals or the trophies that he won for the club. He beat what was in front of him, mm-hmm. and he did it repeatedly, and he gave Celtic supporters many happy memories and many happy times, and he goes with Bill Blessing, and it'll be the strangest feeling to see him play against you next season. But I think to a man, woman and child, everybody just will do that.
Yes, mate.
For Scott Brown.
That ain't right.
And keep that going for as long as they can, because you never know what you've got till it's gone. And
yes.
We'll find that out.
We will. We will. And I did say I would be speaking about the Celtic women's team. A wee update. They're playing on Wednesday night. We'll be covering both games. We'll be covering our own men's game against St Johnstone, as well as the women's game against Glasgow City, who are the only team above us in the league now, Russell. There are two league tables online, one on the BBC website, one on the Celtic website. One of them's got it wrong. It looks as though Celtic are second, and we are actually facing Glasgow City on Wednesday night. Second in the table gives you a Champions League spot. Glasgow City are going for 14 in a row. They beat Rangers 2-0 yesterday, and Celtic beat Motherwell 3-0. We're looking forward to the action on Wednesday night. Thank you everybody for getting involved. It's been an excellent bulletin chatting about everything from Snoop Doggy Dogg and Conor McGregor to Scott Brown and the Celtic ladies team. Fantastic. We will be back again tomorrow at 12:30. Thank you everybody for getting involved on Twitter, Facebook and on YouTube. And also thank you to Tony Haggerty and Russell Boyce, who's pointing down to the subscription button. Please subscribe, and thanks for joining us on A Celtic State of Mind.
Pleasure.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.